Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cafe Esoterica Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Come on in, pull up a cozy chair, and listen to wonderment as we bring you the most enlightened guests on web radio. I am your hostess with the mostest, Sean Cohen. That's me, a psychic, medium, metaphysician, author of 4 books, teacher of esoteric knowledge for 37 years and counting, which is why I am so proud and honored to bring you the authors and practitioners in the know from the Mind, Body, and Spirit Compendium of Life, as well as experts in divination and holistic healing, fabulous tarot readers, wise and profound astrologers, and even the odd rock star, just for your edification and enlightenment. We've been on hiatus, but we're back in the saddle again and raring to go for our 4th season of Cafe Esoterica Radio, broadcasting to you live every Thursday at 7 to 8:30 p.m. UK time, 2 to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and worldwide. So find your time zone and dive in. Want to be part of the show? Please do. Call in on our new number, which is 858-956-3204. Chat in our chat room, which is located at the end of our landing page on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't find it there, just refresh your page and it will appear. Can't catch us live? Not to worry. You can find us on many formats like TuneIn, Podbean, Stitcher, and now Spotify. And you can watch me simultaneously broadcast our show every week live on YouTube. Just go to YouTube.com, put in the search Cafe Esoterica Radio, and you'll see me there live talking to you. So grab your latte, your cappuccino, perhaps a herbal tea, and your best friend, and trip the light fantastic with us once more. And as always, your table is reserved. So come on in. Come on in, folks. I hope you can hear me well. I'm trying desperately to do 2 things at once because I usually work from 2 computers. And just before we went live, naturally, the other one isn't working right. You see, I'm jinxed with computers. I think it's my psychic energy. It just does not work somehow with electronics. It could be my age, but I'm trying very hard to not make that a reality. Now, I'm going to welcome my lovely audience. You're going to hear me putzing a little bit with my other laptop because I'm still trying to get it alive and well, because I like to simul broadcast, I guess is the word, which means that I'm on live on, oh, there's noise from my laptop. I'm live on the YouTube and I'm live on Blog Talk Radio. And if I could do it, boy, I'd love to be live on Facebook too, because a lot of my people, we have our own Facebook group, which is called Cafe Esoterica Group, Radio Group. So if you want to come on in and join that, please do. We'd love to have you. Really, we would. And all my previous guests are in there. And what's great about it, what's really fun about it, is they post, you know, they post all their stuff. So if they're astrologers, they're putting up the interesting things about what's happening in the heavens. If they're, therapists, they're putting up about workshops coming up and little memes here and there. And we do have the odd rock star on, and because I am a big fan of rock and roll. I wore my rock and roll shirt tonight. It says rock and roll. I'm showing the camera here. Let's see. Where is it? Rock and roll, baby, right there. Rock and roll. So I grew up in the rock era, and what a lucky girl I was, because we were, as Mark Bolan said, the children of the revolution. You know, we were the ones that were going to change and save the world.
Well, the world's a pretty screwed up place, but imagine if we hadn't come along. Just imagine how more screwed up it would be. So I thank my lucky stars that I was born in a time in the 50s. In fact, the year I was born, Elvis made number one with Heartbreak Hotel. And I think that's really interesting in itself, that my own sort of history, was Elvis's number one. It has nothing to do with Elvis, of course, but you know, it's interesting when you look at these things. So I was born in the mid 50s, 1956, and I came up 1966. The Beatles were revolutionizing the world, and they were on tour 1964. And our previous guest, Mr. Pat DeCesar, who I sent an email to, I'm hoping maybe Pat will call into the show today. Pat brought the Beatles to Pittsburgh, where I grew up. Now, I was just a little bit young to see them, but all my best girlfriends who had older sisters at the time took their younger sisters. So I do actually have friends who saw the Beatles in Pittsburgh live. And all they remember as being 10 years old was the screaming, the constant screaming, which, of course, it would be. You know, it's the Beatles, after all. And then little girls grow up to be teenagers, and they grow up to be teenagers who, in our time, we were so lucky because we had these rock gods appear. Gods they were. There's nothing less you could call them. Jim Morrison, Robert Plant, you know, just to name two. And for some, Justin Hayward. I'm a big Moody Blues fan. And, you know, these guys were ripping up the airwaves. FM had just begun. So you had in the 60s, you had everything on AM, and only certain stations were playing that filthy music, rock and roll. It makes me laugh now. I'm sure my guest is laughing as he's listening to this. And so who is my guest today? Who is this mystery guest that I have on? He is the author of I Was There, the series of books all about the different groups. And his name, the proper name of the book we're going to talk about tonight is Led Zeppelin, I Was There. So all you Zepp heads, come on in. This is your show. We're going to talk about being a rock and roll fan, loving the best rock band in the world. And Richard Hoyton, I hope I'm saying his name right. Hoyton, I think it is. He'll tell me when he comes on air. Wrote so many of these books, and he's still writing them. And let me just take a moment to read a little bit about his introduction. Well, I'm going to read his introduction, but I want you to know what books he's written because they're amazing. And let me find my notes. Here we go. Richard Hoyton lives in Manchester, England, with his girlfriend Kate, son Bill, and Pompapoo. That's a dog, I imagine. Sid. Was he named after Sid Vicious? You see? Let's find out. He has written books on The Beatles. So, The Beatles, I Was There. The Rolling Stones, I Was There. The Who, I Was There. Pink Floyd, I Was There. Jimi Hendrix, I Was There. And now Led Zeppelin, I Was There. And you know what? Yours truly was there. My story, my fan story, got into his book, and we're going to talk about that. And I wanted, you know, I'm thrilled and thank Richard for taking my story. He must have heard hundreds of thousands of stories about the gorgeous Jimmy Page and the delectable Robert Plant and the absolutely stunning musical genius, which is John Paul Jones, and of course, the banging bongos of Bonzo, which make up Led Zeppelin. So he has also co-authored a book about indie band The Wedding Present with the band's lead singer, and wrote the official biography of Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, which is called Pretending to See the Future. His website is Richard M. Houghton, HOUGHTON.com. Now, I'm going to bring Richard up in just a second. Would you like to call and be on the show? We would love to have you, okay? This is your show. I see people in the... Oh, great. There are people... Who have we got here now? I tuned in to ask your author to write a song about the American Army of Two. A couple of girls stopped the British invasion during the War of 1812. Well, this is Vorpal Bite 3, who has a picture of a shark. Hello, welcome to our chat room. We have chat rooms, folks. We have a chat room in the Blog Talk Radio studio, which you're hearing me on, and we have a chat room which is, we're live and in color. You'll see me in my rock shirt, okay? At Cafe Esoterica, just go to YouTube and put in Cafe Esoterica and radio, and you will see me live. And there's a chat room, and you can ask Richard questions. You can talk to us. Tell us your story. Were you a fan of a great rock group? It doesn't even have to be Led Zeppelin. It can be The Who. It can be anyone you love. We all love rock and roll. Put another dime in the jukebox, baby. Okay, this is our show. I love rock and roll. I have a cousin who's a very famous rock star in her own right, who married a very famous tennis star. I won't say who they are, but you know, I've been around this scene all my life. My aunt was the manager of the Bitter End in the Greenwich Village in the 1960s, and the Gaslight, my Aunt Betty. And, you know, believe you me, what a legacy that place has. Everyone who's anyone started there in America, okay? Maybe, you know, the British guys came over later. But the British invasion, boy, it was sweet. It was amazing. So if you want to call into the show, I'm going to give you the call-in number now. Please make a note of it. Or you can ask questions in the chat room, and we will get back to you. Grateful Dead. Okay. Hi, my friends call me Vorp, V-O-R-P. That's in our chat room on Cafe Esoterica. Okay. Well, I'm very glad you joined us, Vorp. And we are going to hear some music by Led Zeppelin today. We're going to talk about the band, but let's bring up our guest. His name is Richard Houghton. He's written a series of these books. I Was There, Led Zeppelin is the latest. And Richard, thank you so much for coming on our show today. And I'm thrilled to have you. So, welcome.
Hello there.
Hello there. Richard is calling in from Manchester. Okay, so Richard, I want to talk about everything and anything that has to do with your life, your series of why you got involved in this, but let's go. I always ask my guests this, so this is not rocket science, okay? I am a curious person. I would like to know how you got started in what you're doing. What made you want? I mean, I love rock, so, you know, you must love it to write about it. But what made you start this process of books? And what was the first book that you wrote? Was it the Beatles book?
No, the first book was the Rolling Stones. So the way this all happened was, I'm 59 years old now. I'm not a professional writer. I do this in my spare time. But I always wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a writer when I was a kid. It just, life didn't work out that way, sadly. But I've been going to concerts since 1964. I saw the Beatles at Hammersmith Odeon in London when they did their Christmas show.
Right.
I was only 4 years old at the time. My mother took me, and I have absolutely no memory of it. But I was there. Almost at the start, I suppose. I didn't see Elvis Presley, but I saw the Beatles. And I've been going to gigs regularly since I was 17. And in 2014, I went to see the Rolling Stones. They did a European tour, and they played a gig in Stockholm in Sweden. And I took my son, who was just turned 18, and it was July 1st, 2014, and Mick Jagger was on stage, and Mick Jagger celebrates his birthday on the 26th of July each year, and it occurred to me that Mick was going to be turning 71 that month, and that the Stones had been going for 50 years, and I thought, that means they had fans who were fans 50 years ago, and I'd never read any fan stories of the Stones from 50 years ago. Now, being a big Stones fan, I've got bookshelves absolutely heaving with books about the Rolling Stones. I've got over 200 different books, but I'd never read a book telling the Stones story from the fans' point of view. That's when the light bulb came on, and I thought, I'd like to write a book. Nobody's ever done a book about the Stones. I love the Stones, so I will tell story. If I can get people to tell me their stories, I can put it all together and tell the Rolling Stones story from the view of the fans. And that's what I did. So in 2015, published a book called The Rolling Stones, You Had to Be There, telling the story of the Stones in the Brian Jones era. So up until July 1969, when Brian sadly passed away. And that tells the story of the Stones' very early shows in the London area, and playing around the UK, and then their first American tour. And obviously it tells the story of the band in the days before AAA access passes, in the days before security, in the days before Ticketmaster, in the days before you had to get past all kinds of layers of management to get to the band. So some of the stories in that book about the Rolling Stones are about the guy turning up in an old Bedford van, piling out the back of the van and asking the kids on the street how they get into the venue to set their own equipment up, because that's what it was like in 1963. And that was what got me interested, the fact that there were people who were there in 1963, 1964, saw the Beatles, saw the Stones, saw the Who, and I just felt there were tales to be told perhaps hadn't been heard before.
Wonderful, wonderful idea that you had. You know, when you have that many books around you, see, I mean, I'm just making a plug for reading. People aren't reading anymore, and they don't know what they're missing. Young people aren't reading anymore. You know, they're listening maybe to Audible at the most. But honey, bunnies out there, you got to read. You got to take in knowledge. Knowledge is power. And without power, you know, we're all just slaves. You've got to read. And some of the most enjoyable things, doesn't have to all be profound, but something as beautiful as if you love a rock band. And I've read a lot of autobiographies and biographies about the Beatles. I'm particularly like reading a lot of Beatles books, actually. And I have a signed thing from John Densmore from The Doors. Assigned his book was autographed for me. And I have a couple of these things, and they are treasures to me. I absolutely love them. So, you know, being in not one but two of these books, like, I can die now. I've achieved a great goal in my life. You know what I mean? I'm kidding. But still, it's good stuff. Okay, Richard. So you started with the Rolling Stones, right? And then what happened? So that book probably was a big success, I'm guessing. Yes. And you were motivated to do. When I was looking at your website, I was like, my God, you have like, you're working on things as we speak, and you just published a Led Zeppelin one. So
that's right.
You know, what you're just doing them all the time now, aren't you?
Well, what happened with the Stones book is I was obviously talking to people who'd seen the Stones 50 years ago, or sometimes more if they'd seen them back in 1962 in their very early days. And a lot of these people just went out to groups, see groups all the time, because in the small town that they lived in England, maybe they came out, there'd be a regular night where the local cinema wasn't showing films, they'd have a band on Sunday night, but there'd be a local dance hall where there was always a gig on a Tuesday night. So people told me about the Stones, and then they were saying, let me tell you when I saw The Who, or let me tell you when I saw The Kinks. And the biggest act that people talked about more than anybody else, unprompted, was the Beatles. So by the time I'd finished the book on the Stones and collected over 400 stories on the Stones, I'd also got 100 memories of seeing the Beatles, because people wanted to tell me about the Beatles as well.
Right.
So it just seemed a natural progression to do the Beatles next, because I had a quarter of a book already written.
Well, that sounds genius, really. I mean, I remember in my day, there was always this silly battle between the Rolling Stones versus the Beatles. Were the Beatles the right group to follow, or was it the, you know, rough and ready Rolling Stones? And what I think is really funny and ironic, I live in Kilburn, London, not the swankiest area of town, but it has a big rock history, you know, Kilburn. And unbeknownst to me, I only found this out, you know, in certain things, it just comes to me to, you know, little bits of information here and there. Mick Jagger had a flat down the road, right? Right, it's where Kilburn High Road is. You go a little bit higher and you get Shoot Up Hill. Ironically enough, it's called Shoot Up Hill. And John Lennon used to visit him in there all the time, and with Keith as well, Keith Richards. And they just hung out, you know. And so the big sort of thing between them, I mean, the Beatles wrote their first main hit. So it was a lie, you know, it was a big lie that they were enemies and you had to follow one camp, what you know, be in one place or the other. You remember what I'm talking about, Richard?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this was Andrew Lou Golden, wasn't it? And the publicity that he used to get around the Stones. Would you let your daughter go with a Rolling Stone? The Rolling Stones have got fleas. The Rolling Stones never cut their hair. Andrew was master of the dark art of getting publicity, and it seems very innocent times now in the world we live in, but
yes.
Back then the newspapers absolutely lapped it up, because if the Rolling Stones hadn't had their hair cut for 6 weeks, that was a front page story. And Andrew was absolutely fantastic at seeing the kind of stuff that the media would be not horrified about and thought their readers would love to read about. And of course the British public lapped it up, because mums and dads were horrified, and teenage boys, teenage girls particularly, thought it was fantastic.
Well, you know, I mean, this is what I said in the beginning of the show. I'm so glad I was born in that time, because I think kids today, you know, with their Beyonce and their rap, they haven't a clue. I'm sorry, I have to say it. I don't care if I sound like an old lady. The beauty of the rock gigs, the beauty of them was, you know, what's the message in the song? What's the message? And whether it was about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, which it often was, or whether it was about profound metaphysics and spirituality, which was coming through George Harrison's zitar, you know, and fabulous songs like Within You, Without You, and which I play a lot of these songs on the show. And the Moody Blues, of course, were known. I mean, and the word is, you know, that's a Moody Blues song. So my generation, if you didn't get spiritualized, you got drugified. You know, if you didn't get drugified, you got sexified. You know, if you didn't wake up one way or the other, there was something wrong with you, you know, because there was a constant hounding. Literally, the beat was like sex, okay? And when we talk on the show about spirituality and chakras, you know, it's all base chakra stuff, but it illuminates up to the heart. It illuminates up to the crown chakra. And it says, you know, not every song, of course, but it says, you know, we are different than our parents. Well, that's nothing new. Frank Sinatra had the Bobby Saucer, you know, in his generation. But we have something to say that's never been said before. And that word is really freedom of speech, freedom to be gay, freedom to be a woman, freedom to be black, freedom to be a hippie if you want, freedom to be, just to be. And for me, that's what rock did in the world. That's what it did. A lot of people don't realize it, but rock was the voice of the revolutionary times of the 60s. And I think we have a lot to be grateful to these guys. Now, they may be just thinking, I'll get some girls and start a band and, you know, I'll grow my hair long and learn how to play this guitar and give me some of that old rock and roll. But a lot of it was very different than that. I'm curious about your, you know, what you think about what I just said, Richard.
I think you're right. Well, I guess it was, certainly in Britain, it was only the 1960s when the country really started to emerge from the shadows of the Second World War. During the 1950s, we still had food rationing in Britain. The pub shut at 10:30. TV station shut down, the one TV station we had in the 1950s shut down at 10:30, and generally people didn't have cars, and, you know, I guess life is still pretty hard, really, for a lot of people who were either fought in the war, or maybe their father had fought in the war, maybe they'd lost family members. And it was with the 1960s that things started to change. You know, we had pop music on the radio. We had a second TV station. Fashion was a big thing. I remember talking to a woman who was saying that in the 1960s, until about 63, 64, young girls couldn't go out and buy teenage fashions because teenage fashion didn't exist. You bought the same dress as your mother did, and maybe you altered it to make it look a slightly better fit.
Right.
It was only with the advent of Mary Quant and people like that that actually people started designing clothes for younger people, because you hit 18, you were an adult, you got a job or you got married and had kids, and that was what life was up until the 1960s. Everything changed in the 1960s, and the music and the drugs and the politics and the pill and all of that came together at the same time.
You know, it's very interesting because I think I'm going to try this just for a minute. I'm going to put us on Facebook as well. Let's see. I'd like to get some people calling in about their fan stories. So on my other computer, which is finally booted up now, let's see if I can get us in there. But I'm going to carry on talking. Anyway, I remember exactly that, actually. I really remember that. Hold on one sec. I'm just going to write something here, and then we'll be going live on Facebook. So that way, people can see us, and they can call in, right? And so Cafe Esoterica is live. I loved Mary Quant makeup. Oh, my God. And I love the style of Mary Quant. And I was from Pittsburgh, not London, right? So it did change even me as a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old. You know, I was wearing Mary Quant makeup, and I was reading Teen Magazine, and David Cassidy, God rest his soul, you know, was the big thing and in America at the time. And then they had on the Partridge Family, which was sort of sweetened up rock a little bit, didn't it? You know, I think you got it here too, didn't you?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Okay, I'm just putting us on. I'm sorry to be so late. I would have done this earlier had my computer worked, but, you know, it's now working, my other one. So Cafe Esoterica Radio with my guest. I was there, Led Zeppelin. It should be Led Zeppelin. I was there, shouldn't it? Hold on, I've said it wrong. My guess, Richard. How do you pronounce your surname, Richard? Hoyton?
No, it's Houghton. Ho, ho, ho.
Houghton. Houghton, I'm so sorry. Okay, Richard Houghton.
That's okay. You are not the first person to mispronounce my name.
Okay. I want to get us some people in here. On right now. Come on in. Okay. So let's talk about, okay, the 60s were a crazy time and a wonderful time. And of course, Britain and America, different strokes for different folks, because we did have the Vietnam War raging, which was really fueling loads of these things, you know. And unfortunately, I didn't want my boyfriend going off to Vietnam, and neither did all my, you know, friends. We didn't want that. We wanted our peace. We didn't want war, you know. We wanted peace. We wanted happiness for our families and friends. And we definitely, you know, make love, not war. And these thoughts really were picked up by the rock bands coming over from England, because I remember reading, I think it was Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues said, we couldn't understand. We were playing these college campuses, and, you know, these kids were off to war or not, you know, what, and we would ask them, what do you think about Vietnam? What do you think, you should be there? And the kids were like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I should be in Vietnam or not. There was no consciousness about it. Let me just say to my Facebook people, hi, Michael Luton, previous guest. We're doing rock and roll tonight on Cafe Esoterica. Richard Houghton. I said it right, Richard. Houghton? No. Houghton. Richard Houghton. Has written many books on the fans, what the fans think, and they've sent in their hundreds of thousands of letters to Richard. His books are the one we're talking about tonight, Led Zeppelin, I Was There, and yours truly was there. I was there in 1972 or 73. So let me go there for a second, because we've got people coming in on the Facebook, which is nice. So we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, and we're on Blog Talk Radio. This is cool. This is how it should be. If you have a story and you want to speak to my guest, a rock and roll story. You were a fan, you were at an event. Today it's Led Zeppelin, but my guest has written many books, The Who, The Beatles, Pink Floyd, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, many, many, many big bands, you know, many famous bands, Jimi Hendrix. If you were there and you want to talk to my guest, please, please, please call in. I'm going to give you the call-in number. And here it is. It's a new number for our show. It is area code 858-956-3204. And speak to Richard, okay? Or share your story. Now, we're going to go for a break, Richard. We're up to the first half hour. And guess what song I chose for us? Take a guess. It's a Led Zeppelin song, but which one do you think I chose?
Well, there's so many great ones, it'd be impossible for me to guess.
How about California? How about going to California, right? And we'll be back in 3 minutes or so with my guest, Richard. Oh, why does it say 42 minutes? Oh, my God, what happened? Okay, let's see. I'm sure it's all right. Here we go. Should be playing now. And what's that? Okay, we have dead air. There's a problem here with the... What is that? Okay, I'll have to... See, I knew we were going to have trouble here. We always have trouble with this stupid Cafe Esoterica radio. It's not stupid, my show. I'm talking about with the Blog Talk Radio. Let me try again. Hold on. I have to capture it somewhere else now, which is a shame. But here we go, just so you can hear it, because you should hear it. It's important to hear it. Right. I remember this song so well from Led Zeppelin when I moved to California after leaving Pittsburgh and graduating high school. And Robert Plant was singing, you know, going to California. That's it. I was done. I had to go myself, you know. So let's see here. I'm finding it here. And here we go. Sorry for the delay, folks. Having a lot of technical problems today for some reason. Once again. I think you can hear it now. Can you hear the song? Okay, thank you, everyone. We're back. We're back in the studio again. While I was playing that, very interesting, Facebook blocked me for playing that song. How do you like that? It just, your live video has been stopped. I just, unbelievable, right? Let's see if I can come back to that. Let's see. I'll just go right back in. Unfortunately, you know, I agree about copyright and all the right stuff, but, you know, I'm trying to do something here. I know it's not easy. Okay, Richard, you're with us, right?
I am.
Okay, good. Okay, so Richard, let's go back, and we're still talking about the rock bands that made the world and made the world great. And I think it's so important to talk about why do people love Led Zeppelin? Why? What do you think?
I think what Led Zeppelin did was they blew open the whole 3-minute pop single idea. So it's important to remember that the Beatles, although they were fantastic musicians and wrote brilliant songs, they actually came from the old British showbiz tradition. You know, John, Paul, George and Ringo wore collars and ties. Their hair was a little bit longer than maybe people were used to, but they were still pretty short-haired guys. They appeared on bills in theatres with variety acts, you know, with comedians, with jugglers. When I saw them in 1964 at the Hammersmith Odeon in London, the show was compared by Jimmy Savile, who is a famous, now infamous, British radio DJ. But there was also a comedian on the bill, and Ringo and somebody else came out and did a comedy sketch. So you could say, well, that's just a precursor to the kind of stuff they did in the film Help. But actually, it was also showing their links back to the musical traditions of the 1930s in Britain. The Stones obviously pushed the boundaries a lot more because they put out the albums in 68 and 69. They did Beggar's Banquet and they did Let It Bleed. They were growing their hair. You had Cream. You had Hendrix. You had music visibly changing. And I think what Led Zeppelin did was they took the album and said, well, we're not making any singles. They never released an official single in the UK. They only released singles in the US under immense pressure from their record company. And they refused to do mainstream TV after the first few months. They decided that if you wanted to see Led Zeppelin, you had to come to one of their shows. And if you came to one of their shows, you would get the full Led Zeppelin experience. So they might play 2.5-3 hours, or they may play 5 hours. There's a fantastic story in the book where they'd finished, they'd gone off, the house lights went up, and then Robert Plant came out and shouted through the microphone, "Turn the effing lights back on, we aren't finished yet." And they played another 45 minutes. People had started to leave the arena and came back in because the band weren't ready to go home yet. So I think they just tore up the rule book. They were pushing the boundaries and they were saying, well, we can do whatever we want. They famously described themselves as tight but loose because they were fantastic musicians.
Yeah.
But they didn't play like robots. They didn't play the same set 2 nights running. They didn't play a song the same 2 nights running. They would freeform in the middle of a number, and so you never quite knew what you were going to get. So they took the principles of jazz almost. So they take a song, and they might 3-minute song on the record might be 12 minutes in concert. And I think that's what Led Zeppelin did. They became a concert attraction, a live attraction. And by making themselves scarce, by not appearing on TV, not doing traditional media, not being on Top of the Pops in Britain, which is what every other band would do to get publicity, Led Zeppelin took the opposite course and said, if you really like our music, if you want to find out about our music, you've got to come and see us in concert.
Led Zeppelin really, not only did they tear the rule book up, but so did their manager, as we know, Peter Grant. Made it doable and viable for every band after them to get a decent pay for their work, for their, you know, for everything, for their tours. And correct?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, Peter. Apparently, bands have got a very small percentage of the take, and Peter Grant said, "If you want my band, you've got to give us 90% of the ticket money." And obviously promoters didn't want to do that because they were having to give up a large slice of the money they'd previously taken for granted. But Peter, by all accounts, was not a man to be messed with. You know, he knew Don Arden, who was Sharon Osbourne's father, wife of Ozzy Osbourne. And Peter and Don were, I wouldn't say they were villains, but they were both very tough negotiators. Don Arden famously hung somebody out of an office window when he thought that person was going to try and steal the small faces from him. So Peter had learnt a few tricks off Don, and Peter was a big guy physically, and he protected his band, and the band respected him because he did deals that benefited the band, that made Jimmy and Robert and John Paul and Bonzo very rich men, you know. And the Jimmy and Robert in particular, you know, live off the money that they made from the records they made 30, 40 years ago, and are very wealthy men as a result of that.
You know, and it's very interesting how, you know, people, I don't think people, especially younger people, I don't want to go on about younger people, but because they have their own gigs and their own thing and their own music like we did, but people don't realize how hard these bands worked. You know, there was no internet. There was no mobile or cell phones. Forget that. Even a transatlantic phone call must have cost a fortune back then. If you think of, you know, Brian Epstein calling New York to book the Beatles, you know, how much did that cost? Although he had money, you know, but I mean, what we don't understand. I wish Pat DeCesar, I sent him an email. I've been so busy, I didn't have a chance to really follow it up, but I wanted Pat to call in. Because Pat did book the Beatles, you know, in 1964. And he was the rock promoter in not only Pittsburgh, but all around that tri-state area. And Pat wrote a book called Hard Days, Hard Nights, all about it, if you want to pick that up too. But it is absolutely, what a story. What a life to be a rock promoter. So we're writing, your book is wonderful, beautiful. It's all about the fans. And I have, of course, my own fan story. And before we run out of time, would it be all right if I shared it?
Absolutely.
Richard, I can't thank you enough. I feel like my life has been transformed. I am in this book, folks who are listening to me on Facebook and on YouTube. And here is the email I actually sent Richard. Here it is. You can see it live and in color, where I gave my story about, because at the time Richard was calling for, I didn't know Richard. He didn't know me. I belonged to fan groups on Facebook, Led Zeppelin, everyone I love, you know. And he put something out there. Anyone got a fan story they want to put in a book? Now, a lot of people know that I got into, a couple months back, David Bowie, I Was There, which is written by your friend, Neil, is it Kassar? How do you say his surname?
It is, Richard. Yeah.
Kassar, yeah. And I didn't know you two knew each other. I mean, it's just as, you know, but obviously this is the franchise, right? This is the book, and David Bowie, I Was There. And my story takes place in Kilburn. It's a really cute story. And this is a very similar story. You know, all my life growing up as a teenager, I saw David Bowie, I saw Led Zeppelin, I never saw the Beatles. I was too young. And they stopped touring, you know, and I never saw, I'm not a Stones fan personally, but my brothers went to them many, many times. I never went. But, I love Led Zeppelin. I belong to a Facebook group that is with a couple girlfriends of mine, and we just dish the dirt on Led Zeppelin. That's what we do, okay? And so here's my story, and it takes place. So I'll just read it, and I'll share it with everyone. And if people want to comment on it, they can. But it's in Richard's book. I don't know which page it's on, but he sent me the link. It's definitely in his book. And this is me telling the story. So I put, hello, I was there. That picture of the band posing in front of their private jet to take them to concerts was in my hometown of Pittsburgh, PA. That's a very famous picture or video of them. And Robert standing there with his no shirt on, you know, and Jimmy walking up to the plane. I was there at the concert they were about to do. It was 1973, and I was 16 going on 17 years old, and my best girlfriends and I went to see them live. When Robert got up there with a girl's top on, because for us it was like, what is he wearing, you know? Remember, men were men and women were still trying to come up a little bit with women's lib. You know, it was very distinctive roles of sex back then, and it started to homogenize. And Robert was just one, and of course, David Bowie was Ziggy Stardust, but it started to homogenize a bit. And then we get the term unisex. That started a little bit later, didn't it? But here we go. So a girl's top on with his bare chest hanging out, it was unforgettable. The moves, the music, his wailing soulful voice, blended with Jimmy's guitar, Bonzo's banging beat, and John Paul Jones's bass line, whoa. We were tranced out. It was like a religious experience, and when Stairway to Heaven came on, which was their big hit then, not a sound was made as everyone listened intensely. If you were there in 1970, 72, 73, this was the tour to go see, and we did. Now, this is actually not the story, but I have loved Led Zeppelin all my life. Who knew I would end up working in the Primrose Hill Healing Center in London, England, and dating their owner, Ken. He was a good man, Ken. This was now 1988, and I had lived and worked here in London for 3 years. So one day after work, Ken said to me, do you want to get a drink before we go home? It was a particularly hard day, and we both work with patients or clients, and we were tired. And I said, yeah, okay, where should we go? Now, why he never, ever mentioned this place before, which was just at the bottom of the road where the Primrose Healing Center was, I don't know. But that particular night, he said, okay, why don't we go just here? So we walked in there, and Ken sat down first, and I said, okay, I'll get us the drinks. And as I approached the bar, right smack dab in front of me were these two bums sticking up. One belonged to someone with long, curly, blonde hair, and the other darker hair. And from the back, all I could see was the bums and the hair, right? They were leaning on the bar, and I could only see them from behind. Suddenly, the penny dropped as I saw the blonde turn and speak to the other, and I could see it was Robert Plant. Can you imagine 1988, this girl from Pittsburgh, and there's Robert Plant. I could stick my hand out and touch him. He was that close to me. I was just about to go up to him and say hi, and could we buy them a drink, get an autograph, could I dump my boyfriend and run away with him? You know, the usual, when he seemed to get a vibe, someone was standing behind him, and they ran up the stairs, which were right behind the bar. There was a staircase. He did not turn around to see me at all, and maybe they were headed that way anyway, but I was caught, absolutely caught. Should I run up the stairs after Robert Plant and get an autograph and tell him how much I love him and how I had seen him in Pittsburgh with Led Zeppelin play a couple times, or should I be a good girl and just get my boyfriend a drink and behave myself and sit down? I stood frozen and then looked at my boyfriend, and still in shock, I said, is that who I think it is? And he said, nonchalantly, looking up from his newspaper, who, Robert Plant? Oh yeah, he comes in here all the time. He lives around the corner. I was shocked. And I was so mad at my boyfriend for not telling me. Why didn't you tell me he lives in here? He comes in here. I was outraged. How could he keep such precious information from me? His response, I didn't know you liked him. I was still in shock as I sat down and had my glass of wine waiting in vain for Robert to come back down the stairs. For the laws of gravity state, what goes up must come down. But no, he never reappeared. Like a magician, he disappeared out some trap door the pub must have had created just for him. Of course, devastated, that was it. I ended up leaving a boring boyfriend for many reasons. That boring boyfriend, he wasn't boring, he was a good man. But, you know, it just wasn't meant to be. So it goes on that I created the my girlfriend and I created the Led Zeppelin's Ladies Club, which is still open on Facebook if anyone wants to join. And many years later, I became friends with Pat DeCesar, who is the guy who booked them in to the Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh, which created Stadium Rock, because he was the first guy. He had so many tickets, he couldn't fit them in the Civic Arena, which was a normal place, and he used the stadium for football, which is called, at the time, the Three Rivers Stadium. And so that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And there you go, my story about almost meeting Robert Plant. I'm sure you had a million stories like that. What can you recall, Richard, any story that really, you know, took the biscuit for you? It was really rock and roll, you know, anything at all?
Well, there's probably about 200 different shows that are recalled by people. And there's a couple of stories I didn't know. For example, there's a show in Kansas City in, I think, 1971, where the band had decided to stop off in Kansas and do a show, but their equipment was flown on to their next gig the following day. And John Bonham, who, despite being one of the world's greatest drummers, used to get terribly homesick and used to drink quite heavily to compensate for that, apparently was quite put out at the fact that he wouldn't have his normal drum kit to play on, and because the drums had been flown off the next gig, so he had to hire equipment from the local music shop. And John sat in the audience whilst the support band played, and John drank a bottle of bourbon. And then they played their first set, and then they were playing another show later that evening. And by the time of the second show, John was extremely drunk, such that he kept falling asleep at the kit. And then at one point he got up and ran across the stage and then sat down behind his drum kit again. So the roadies were trying to keep him awake and get him to function. And Page and Plant were trying to keep the band going, obviously aware that he wasn't entirely with it. And in the end, they had to cut the show short because John was so drunk, he was too drunk to actually play. So that was quite a novel experience, because the received wisdom is, as I was saying earlier, that Zeppelin were fantastic and they always put on a great show. But of course, they were four human beings, and just occasionally, they weren't all on song. And if, you know, John was drunk, or as sometimes happened later in their career, if Jimmy was partaking of too many chemicals, the band weren't necessarily at their best. Lots of stories too of women going to see Robert and very much admiring Robert's physical form, particularly the tight trousers that he used to wear, and as you've already talked about, the perhaps the lady's clothes or the bare chest that he used to reveal. So, you know, he was, and to some people, of course, still is, very much a thing of great beauty. And that was part of their attraction. They looked like rock gods. Robert, with his long blonde hair, with the lights on him, making his hair look golden, was something to behold. So you had the great music, and you had the beautiful-looking lead singer, and you had fantastic light shows. You had Jimmy with his laser playing the bow on his guitar. And then, of course, you had thousands upon thousands of watts of volume. So you didn't just stand there and listen to a Led Zeppelin show. You know, you absorbed it. The sound, the volume penetrated your body because you vibrated with the sound.
One of the things that, I mean, the Led, you know, just for my Facebook people who are coming in late thinking they're going to get a tarot reading, no, this is Cafe Esoterica Radio, and we are talking to a fabulous author whose name is Richard Hoyton, and Richard wrote Led Zeppelin, I was there. And it's all a collaboration of all the fans who've written in about Led Zeppelin and whether they were at the gigs or whether they had a personal experience with one of the members of the band or like me, a close shave. You know, almost met Robert Plant right in front of me. I think it's a wonderful thing. He's done many, many books. I'm just recapping. He's done The Who, The Beatles, Pink Floyd, Jimi Hendrix. Coming up with, right now you're working on, it's Glad All Over. What's the name of, it's not also orchestra.
That's a book on the Smiths. That's a book on the Smiths.
On the Smiths, that's right. A lot of Smiths fans out there, yeah. Yeah, so...
Smiths, surprisingly, you know, because it's happened in my... during the time of my musical awareness, the Smiths, surprisingly, have been split up now for over 30 years. And, of course, I remember that they were on TV and having hit records in my early 20s. So, for me, personally, it's a real, gosh, was it really 30 years ago? It's a sign of how old I am.
Yeah.
I you know, have to remind myself that I'm 59 because I still think I'm 21, as I'm sure a lot of 59-year-olds do.
Don't we all, Richard?
It's only when you look yourself in the mirror that you realise that you're not the age that you think you are. And it's musical landmarks like that that also bring it back to you. You know, Morrissey himself is 60 now, and he's not the young, bequiffed, good-looking guy that he was. He's a very handsome man, but he's obviously got a 6 on the speedometer now, and his music has changed. But his fan base still harks back to when they were in their teen years or in their 20s. And that's part of the appeal of the book, and that's part of the reason why people want to share their stories with me, because actually it's not just what they remember, it's what they want to remember. They want to remember being 17 again and going to their first show or dating
Absolutely.
Their first boyfriend or girlfriend.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Liberties that come with being a teenager.
We want to be young. We want to have those memories, and those memories are very precious. To be, you know, when we grew up. Also, it's the thing about feelings. Let me just go to this, and then we're going to take another break. I will have to mute. Listen to this madness. I will have to mute Facebook while I play a Led Zeppelin song, because unfortunately, you know. The Facebook Nazis want to cut me off from my live feed because I was playing that. And I'm very sad about that, but, you know, must do, must do. So we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about Led Zeppelin with our wonderful guest, author of all these books. I Was There, fan books, Richard Houghton. Okay, I know I'm saying it wrong again. Houghton. Houghton. Like H-O-U-T-H-T. T-O-N is the end. And I have the website up on the Facebook. I have the website up here in the chat room, on both chat rooms, on YouTube and on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, let's do that. Let's take a break. We are playing for the Facebook Nazis. We're playing very sadly. We're going to play Thank You, which I love. I think it's a beautiful song. It really is lovely. I didn't do any big bangings. We're going to do one to finish with tonight. But so let's go there. I think I've got a problem in my studio. I have to find it on my YouTube. Hold on. And so... Yeah, this is what happens when you go live, see? Everything goes a bit nuts. But that's the way it is. And now before I play it, I am going to play it. I got to just mute Facebook before they go nuts. Okay, so hang in there, Facebook. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Don't go away with more of a great show all about Led Zeppelin, all the little things you want to hear. So hang in there, and we'll be right back. Let me just do this. Right. Okay, the sound's off there. Here we go. Thank You by Led Zeppelin. Okay, we're back. We're live. We're here. We're unmuted. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back. Facebook pulled a little punch on me too because I mentioned it. Even the sound was off. God. But anyway, we're still live on Facebook. We're live on Blog Talk Radio. And we're live on YouTube. And that is a beautiful song. Thank you by Led Zeppelin. And, you know, a lot of people, because of this, you don't have the banging and the, you know, heavy rock and roll sound, doesn't mean that these groups can't do beautiful ballads, beautiful acoustic work. And their love for that, too. Their love for that, too. Right, Richard?
That's right.
I would like to invite our listening audience to call in and share your stories, your rock and roll stories. If you have any, please do. The number is, if you're calling outside the United States, you need the code USA, which is 001. And then inside the United States, you dial 858-956-3204. And you will reach the studio directly. And if you call in, right, you can share your rock and roll story with Richard. Who knows? Maybe he'll put it in his next book. What are you working on next, Richard?
So after the Smiths, which I'm hoping to actually finish this weekend, and which will be in September, my next book is going to be on Black Sabbath.
Oh, any Black Sabbath fans out there, if you love Black Sabbath, if you're crazy about Sharon's husband, by all means, call in and talk to Richard or send him an email. I was at that gig. I was at that gig. Let me read it properly. Right, Richard, will you take their... Okay. I was at that gig at gmail.com. And Richard's website, you can check it out if you don't remember it or whatever. You can always ask me. But it's his all the W's, richardmhoten.com. So please do check it out. Okay, let's go back to what we were talking about. If anyone's going to call in, I don't know. But let's talk about... What do you think their legacy will be like in 50 years' time? Not just Led Zeppelin, but maybe all the bands, because you've only written about some of the best in the world. So what do you think is going to happen long after we're gone, 50 years from now?
That's a very good question, because, I mean, there weren't that many different musical artists recording in the 1920s and 1930s. And yet many of them are probably unknown to the vast majority of the population, including people who listen to music. So, you know, how many people know of Jelly Roll Morton, for example? Mm. And if you think about how many more acts have been recorded in the 60s and 70s, and, okay, you and I may not be big fans of modern music, but there are kids writing music in their bedrooms now, putting it out on YouTube, putting it out on the web, and how much of that stuff is actually going to be remembered in 50 years' time, not just because it may or may not be good music, but because there's so much of it. Every week another slew of new albums is released, and it's just incredibly difficult to keep on top of that stuff and know what's happening, and listen to all your old favourites too. And I think, personally, I maybe buy one or two new albums a year by new artists, but pretty much I go back to the same artists. It might be re-releases of old stuff that's been remastered with additional tracks, like the Stones have done in recent years and Zeppelin have done, or it might be acts are new from 25, 30, 40 years ago who put out new material, like Elvis Costello put out a new album last year, and I'm a big Elvis fan, so I bought that. Because it was Elvis, I didn't have to worry about whether I was going to like it or not. I knew I would. Neil Young is somebody who I've followed for many years. And
I love Neil.
Great about Neil is he takes risks, doesn't he? You don't know what you're going to get with a Neil Young album.
Yeah.
You hope you're going to get something great, but you know it won't be Neil going through the motions, whatever you get.
The thing that's fascinating to me is, look, let's be honest. A lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll under the bridge there. A lot of them survived in spite of all that. And it was very rough. I remember the 1970, we had Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, and Jim Morrison all died within the rock and roll trifecta, you know? They all died within a very, very quick time, within months of each other, if not weeks. And very upset. Do you remember this?
I wasn't quite old enough to really appreciate what was happening then. I mean, I was only 10 years old.
Right.
And I grew up in a household where we weren't allowed to watch pop music on television. My dad did national service. So my dad left the army about the same time that Elvis went in the army. And my dad came out and had to get a regular job because he wanted to get married to my mum. So I feel like my dad missed out on being a teenager. And I kind of think he didn't really like me being a teenager either, because he hadn't had any fun himself. And certainly his musical tastes were very, very old-fashioned.
Mm.
He didn't get rock and roll at all. He didn't like... And in the 1960s, when I was a kid, I remember they used to say there were three things that he didn't like. He didn't like Harold Wilson, who was the British Prime Minister and the leader of the Labour Party, because he didn't like socialists. He didn't like ITV, because he didn't like commercial television, so we were never allowed to watch ITV. We always had to watch the BBC, and preferably BBC One. And he absolutely, 100%, did not like Mick Jagger. Now, I'm sure he was like lots of parents, lots of dads in particular, who didn't approve of Mick Jagger pouting on their TV screen, or David Bowie wearing makeup and draping his arm around Mick Ronson's shoulders, or Morrissey dancing on Top of the Pops in 1983 and waving gladioli around on stage. But that's the kind of thing that as a teenager you have to deal with, in the same way that girls, you know, want to go out with the boys who are a little bit dangerous. The boys have got their hair cut a little longer, or they've got a car, they've got access to drugs and want to stay out all night. All those things that your parents don't want you to do that you want to do as a teenager. You know, I had those battles with my dad. Oh, and he was a fantastic dad. We got on great, but, you know, like every teenager, I was pushing the boundaries whenever I could, and I told him as little as possible because he would have been horrified if he knew all the things I got up to.
You know, it's so important that we are able as teenagers to separate from our parents. This is 101. This is basic psychology 101. Do you know what I mean? And it's just important for us to have our own music, our own style of dress, to be independent from our parents and begin that long process of separating. Because separating from the parents is actually the most emotionally healthy thing to do at certain ages. Now, if you do it too young or you do it too late, you know, you're in trouble. But the most important thing you can do is give, if you will, teenagers the very thing they need, which is rock and roll, rebelliousness, and it's a good thing to be able to separate from your parents and not dress like them, not act like them, my daughter just graduated university last week, and she's 22 now, and she's going through that process of separating from me, and it's painful as a parent. But I also know that it's important she has her own ideas about her life, and to come into them, you have to have your own. You play around with growing up. You play around with identities. You play around with who's who. Young girls loved. I'm just thinking of David Cassidy, you know, because it's kind of like a safe transition to a man. If he's far away and you don't, you know, you're never really going to sleep with him. It's only a fantasy. Then young girls begin to allow themselves. That's what happened with the Beatles. The Beatles look so, pip pip cheerio, you know, clean, and they're sensing humor and everything. It was very safe. It was safe. That's the best way to say it. But as the Beatles grew and as they experimented with drugs, they became not safe. You know, really, when you think about it, not, I don't mean they were bad, any way bad, but they were not a safe option for a mother. Maybe their money, but definitely not their drug taking, you know. You have, whereas Jim Morrison, he was not safe from the word go. You know, from the word go, always slithering like a snake on stage. There was some deep, dark stuff going on there with Jim. So, you know, it's important that we have our idols. It's important that we have, you know, Bob Dylan did it in a different way, didn't he? He did it with his words, his lyrics, his words. I think were what made Bob, I mean, at one time he was violently hated in America because he was calling the shots and telling the truth about how people were treated in America. Masters of War is a genius song. It talks about, you know, big war is big business, they don't care who dies, and that's exactly what was going on in Vietnam, right? And, you know, it's ironic, all these years later, he won the Poet Laureate Award. Do you see what I'm saying here? I'm agreeing with you. To jump from that transition from, you know, hated lowlife, how dare you come in and wear your hair long and be this person who upsets the apple cart, who are you, to 50 years later, the finest poet on the planet. And that's really what it is.
I guess it's like, I guess it's like Nelson Mandela. He was viewed as a terrorist, and then he was viewed as a statesman and somebody who actually held South Africa together at the end.
My God, Richard, we went so quickly. We're almost out of time. I just noticed the time. We've got 10 minutes. We've got 9 minutes left. Can you believe that?
It
went
so quickly.
And 3 times I had to go back on Facebook. Now there's 2 people there, Steve and someone else. But if you want to catch the whole interview, please check it out on Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ Cafe Esoterica Radio, and you'll find this edition, this show, right? We're also available on Spotify. We're also, so if you didn't catch us live, it's okay. You can hear us on Spotify, Podbean, Acast. We're also on Stitcher, and you can watch the video of me doing the show on YouTube again. And I'd like to thank Richard for coming today. It's already over with, Richard. Can you believe it?
I can't. It's gone so quickly. I've had so much fun, too.
Oh, I love, love, love your books. I love them. I'm going to get them all, I promise you. And you mentioned on your website that if a person wants an autograph from you, are you still doing that from if they buy their book?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, more than happy to do that.
Okay. Okay. So what do they do, Richard? Tell the audience. How do they do it?
If they want to purchase a book, the best way to do that, if they want an autograph from me and a dedication, they can either email me at iwasatthatgig@gmail.com or check out my website, which is richardmhoughton.com, or they can go to the publisher's website, which is thisdayinmusicbooks.com.
Okay, that's fantastic, and they will do that, I'm sure, because we all love rock and roll, and thank God for people like you. This is like a history too, isn't it? A history of the band and a history of everything that they really the gigs. Oh, sorry, we're not going out yet. Hold on. We will be though to ramble on. Okay, Richard. So thank you very, very much for being my guest today. A little higgly-piggly with difficulties with the two computers, but you know, I try so hard. And God bless you. Keep writing. We love your books. We love rock and roll. We want these stories. They're great. Great stories to tell our children and our grandchildren too. And on that, I'm going to go out with my usual In This Metaphysical Moment, which is the word. Here it is. In the madness of life, the hustle and bustle of our daily grind, comes the healing power of lyrics, melody, and rhyme. For who cannot say they haven't been washed away by a sound so sublime, keeping its time, healing our hearts and minds. Music, lyrics with meaning, transcends like meditation. If the sound be om, then that takes us peacefully within, but bang that drum like Bonzo and you're shaken down below. How can it be we are dedicated slaves to the musicians who make these? One by one, these beautiful and powerful bands are getting old, their youth just fading away as they take their last stand. Once again upon that familiar stage, yet own it they do, just once more for me and for you. God of rock, rock on. In this metaphysical moment, these are the memories of fun, of good times, and of youth that make us fondly smile within. Whenever their songs come on the radio or we are able to get tickets to their gigs, these faint but emotive memories come to life. Thank you to all the bands we grew up with who made us the people we are today with their meaningful lyrics, their pounding beat, and their fantastic revolutionary ways. Gods of rock, we salute you. And on that note, I'll be playing out Ramble On by Led Zeppelin next week. My dear friend, Petey Silvera, is here, past life regressionist, marriage and family therapist, and author of her latest book. We'll see you then. Bye, Richard. Bye, Facebook. Bye, YouTube. And we'll be back next week, same time, same place. Ramble On, everyone. Here we go with Led Zeppelin, one of the best songs I ever wrote. On my way.
Thank you.